here's a song about how the Great Northeast became the Great Southwest, which happened here, a variation of it. But this is about another settler state built on stolen land called the USA. My name is John Riley. I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland. It was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go. Enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. And it was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. And there amidst all these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We marched neath the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin Cobra. Right with the harp and the shamrock, and the Libertad Republica. Just 50 years after Wolf Tone, 5,000 miles away, the gangs called us a legion of strangers, and they can talk as they may. But from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. What do? We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We fought them in Matamoros, where their volunteers were raping the nuns. In Monterey and Cerro Gordo, we fought on as Ireland's sons. We were the red-headed fighters for freedom amidst these brown-skinned women and men. Side by side, we fought against tyranny, and I dare say we'd do it again. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. Churubusco was the last. Overwhelmed by the cannons from Boston, we fell after each mortar blast. Most of us died on that hillside in the service of the Mexican state. So far from our occupied homeland, we were heroes and victims of fate. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. nothing's changed for me. When I see your face, I see the dawn, and like you, it's filled with grace. When I look into your eyes, I see all that I have known. I see a red sunrise and the kindness you have shown. Nothing's changed for me. Now when I think about those days, I feel a tremble in my knee. My impression never fades. Oh, to touch your golden skin and the fullness of your smile. I bemoan the state I'm in, but I love you all the while. 'Cause nothing's changed for me. And like everybody here, I'm so glad that you could make it. It's so good to have you near. For your words I laugh and cry as I look around, I'm sure. I'm surrounded by your lovers, only one of many more. But nothing's changed for me. I still yearn for your embrace. Sometimes I close my eyes, then I gaze upon your face. I know everything must end, but I remember our last kiss. I recall your parting glance, and there's so much more I miss. 'Cause nothing's changed for me, except you went away. You're moving on, and I'm stuck in yesterday. So I'll wish you all that's good, and I'll make a toast for you, for all the places you may travel, for whatever you may do. 'Cause nothing's changed for me. I'm still in love so much, I know I'll be okay. But I miss your gentle touch. There are songs for victories, songs for things that fall apart. This is just a song for my broken heart. So a friend of mine from Germany was on a march against nuclear power soon after the Chernobyl meltdown. And she and 200 other people, mostly Europeans, a few North Americans, and the requisite handful of Japanese Buddhist monks that accompany any march against nuclear power in the world, if it's more than 100 miles long, you can check into that. I'm sure I'm proven right, although I've never looked at official statistics, if there are any. But they were walking from Paris to Moscow over the course of 6 months, and they were near the beginning of their walk, and they were passing through the Belgian countryside, and they were camped out at a farm, and they were traveling with they were walking, but they were traveling with a diesel bus that was transporting, you know, people with blisters or children or, you know, all the cooking equipment, backpacks and all that stuff. So they and their diesel bus are camped out at this farm in Belgium, and a group of Belgian farmers comes to their consensus meeting one night, and they say, "You guys, we support the cause. We want to be down on this march, and we'd like to propose that you leave your diesel bus here in Belgium, pick it up later, we'll come with you the rest of the way to Moscow, and we'll transport the kids and the backpacks and all that in mule-drawn wagons," which sounded like a picturesque and media-friendly and environmentally sound and altogether good idea to most of the marchers. But there were six vegans from Finland who blocked consensus because they're opposed to the enslavement of the mules. And, got me to thinking, if I were a Belgian mule, which is a bit difficult to quite imagine, having never been either a mule or a Belgian, but if I were a Belgian mule, would I rather stick around the farm for the rest of my life or walk to Moscow? And with all due respect to the Finns and the vegans, I think they got it all wrong, and I wrote this song out of solidarity for the mules of Belgium. There's some feedback on that. That's the one. I don't drive a car because they run on gas. But if I did, it'd run on biomass. I ride a bike or sometimes a skateboard. So fuck off all you drivers and your yuppie hordes sitting all day in the traffic queues. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat. I just live on moldy chives or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dives. Looking at people in that restaurant, I think you are so sad when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is a shame all the bourgeois things you do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather and I like my clothes in black, and I made a really cool hammock from a moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains. I think is so cool. It's so much better doing this than being stuck in school. I can't believe you're wearing those brand new shiny shoes. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't have sex, and there will be no sequel because heterosexual relationships are inherently unequal. I'll just keep on moshing to anti-flag and crass until there are no differences in gender, race, or class. All you brainwashed breeders, you just haven't got a clue. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't believe in voting. I think consensus is the key. I don't believe in stupid notions like representative democracy. Whether or not it works, I know it is the case that only direct action can save the human race. So when I see when you're voting booths, then I know it's true. I'm a better anarchist than you. I am not a pacifist. I like throwing bricks, and when the cops have caught me and I'm taking a few licks, I always feel lucky if I get a bloody nose because I feel so militant and everybody knows. By the time the riot is all through, I'm a better anarchist than you. I'm a better anarchist than you.
Well, my friend Rafif lives in Canada now, and she is living in her 23rd country after without a passport, too. And she was born to two Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, and being of what the Palestinians call half and half parentage, a Muslim father and a Christian mother, she had the dubious choice to live in either Sabra or Shatila, and her family settled in the Shatila refugee camp. And at the age of four in 1982, the Falangists armed and protected and provided with 24 hours of lighting by the Israeli military, went in and killed her parents and her baby brother and 3,000 other, mostly women and children, over the course of several days of slaughter. And she moved to Cyprus and Tunisia and Greece, and eventually ended up, for the time being, in Canada. And this song is for her. I was born a refugee, and I don't know if I'll ever see the old farmhouse I've heard about, but it's where I belong, there is no doubt. My whole family is from that farm. We never did nobody harm. And if you're confused by what you've heard, let me boil it down to a single word. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. I have heard my grandpa say on the street most every day, the neighbor's kids would kick a ball with my dad when he was small. We were Christians, they were Jews, but it was no big deal. Religious views, so it was strange when at the point of a gun across the river we had to run. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. We had Depp Gibb, we had songs, we all knew where we belong. We grew crops, life was good there in the land where Jesus stood. Now we're scattered everywhere. There's no peace anywhere. And I'm just searching for some kind of sign, for some way back to Palestine. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Series of tragic events that just happened in the state of Kansas about 2 months ago, and I wrote this song and I read about it in the paper, and I think it made the paper here too. It certainly made the paper in England, because that's where I was. Song and there's a loud conversation going on in the back. It's really fucking annoying. So if you could go outside, that'd be nice. this next song allows you to break U.S. law and face a potential 25-year prison sentence. So that's another reason you should go outside if you don't want to break U.S. law. So now you don't have to just go outside because you want to talk. You can go outside for some perfectly reasonable reason, like not going to prison. If you sing the chorus of this song, you're a criminal. And so I consulted a constitutional lawyer about this, and it's actually true. With the climate talks coming up in December, seems to me that there's certain things we got to put on the agenda, like burning down all the malls, you know. And it seems to me, you know, we can do that illegally or legally with, you know, I propose the legal method, you know, as long as we can get everybody to cooperate really soon, you know, like Congress and whoever. And we can have the fire department there at all the malls, making sure the trees don't catch, and, you know, controlled burns, you know. But however it's done, it seems like for the survival of our species, it's necessary. But now, since 1997, it's illegal even to talk about it in the U.S. because there was a law passed that says if you describe an incendiary device and encourage people to use such a device for the purposes of the liberation of animals or the environment, you're an eco-terrorist and should go to prison for 25 years just for talking about it. And so there were, there's a lot of people who have gone to prison for doing things like, you know, burning down bulldozers and glue factories and stuff like that. They're always kind of in competition with disgruntled ex-employees to see who can burn down the most shit, you know? The ELF and the disgruntled ex-employees might not actually like each other if they've met on the street, but they're both burning down the same shit. There's been 5 people who have gone to prison as a result of this law. They've all taken plea bargains because one of them, Rod Coronado, took it to trial. It was a hung jury, and so then he took a plea bargain and went to prison for about 10 and a half months. And he was the last guy. So I'll tell you when your part comes. Ronnie Coronado was arrested for a speech that he gave one evening by the San Diego Beach. He stated his opinions, they sounded just like mine. Now they want to put him behind bars till 2029. The prosecutor said the problem was the speech and showed intent. I couldn't figure out exactly what that meant. You can't describe an action, say a thought that it will swell. So what'll happen when we sing this? Who the heck can tell? But we don't like the condo and we're gonna burn it down. Corporate terrorists driving out of town. We'll bring a lot of gasoline, pour it on the floor, light a match, say a prayer, and run right out the door. Burn it down. This is your part. I say burn it down, then you say burn it down with great feeling and intent. And the thing is, even if you don't sing along, when they subpoena you to the grand jury, they're probably not going to ask you whether you were singing along. They're going to ask you who else was in the room. So you can just sing along anyway because it's therapeutic. And it's too late. Burn it down. Burn it down. We're going to burn it. Although I think the anarchists sing better than the socialists. I don't know if you guys can stand that, but somebody's gonna make more noise in the back. Well, if you just sang that chorus, then you just broke the law to be an eco-terrorist. Now you just gotta flash your jaw, and hey, who knows, by the time you have a chance to blink, whether you're a criminal might depend on what you think. But we don't like the bulldozer, we're gonna burn it down. Corporate terrorists, drive them out of town. We'll bring a lot of gasoline, pour it on the floor, light a match, say a prayer, and run right out the door. Burn it down.
Burn it down.
Burn it down.
Burn it down.
We're going to burn it down. Burn it down.
Burn it down.
Burn it down.
Burn it down.
Burn it down. Lovely. First it came for Rob, maybe next I'll come for you. Let me tell you what I think all of us should do. Sing the song with me, raise your fist and caterwaul. If we fight together, they can't arrest us all. Cause we don't like the Walmart and we're gonna burn it down. Corporate terrorists, drive them out of town. We'll bring a lot of gasoline, pour it on the floor, light a match, say a prayer, and run right out the door. Burn it down.
Burn it down.
Burn it down.
Burn it down.
We're going to burn it.
Burn it down,
burn it down,
burn it down,
burn it down. Yeah. That was lovely. So, this next song I wrote in, I guess around like September 1st, 2005. And if you recall, in September 1st, 2005 was a fairly eventful time for people in the US. In particular, the Camp Casey, where Cindy Sheehan and everybody had just been camping out for a month, and in Texas was just closing up, and people were all getting ready to go on a speaking tour all over the country, and then they all ended up going to New Orleans, and I was just leaving Camp Casey and going to Houston and to catch a flight to Beirut, Lebanon, and flying over New Orleans while it was flooding instead of going there because I had a plan for a tour and I kept it unlike everybody else, and. For some reason, but everybody was talking about New Orleans, and I was sitting in the airport in Houston next to a guy who was also like everybody else complaining about the horrendously inefficient and inadequate government response to the crisis, and I commented to the guy, well, it's too bad that the National Guard's all in Iraq because they could be doing something useful in Louisiana. And the guy next to me said, well, don't criticize the military. I was in the Air Force for 22 years. And then I was like, oh, shit, you know, so what are you so proud of? what did you do that you're so proud of? And he said, well, I bombed Libya. And it just so happened, oddly enough, that I was going to Beirut to meet my friend Rana El-Khatib, whose cousin had been killed in the bombing of Libya. And she lived right next to Gaddafi. She was not one of the poorer members of Libyan society. And I mentioned that to the guy, and you killed my friend's cousin, and that killed the conversation. And then I got to Beirut, and I was sort of, oddly enough, having never been to Lebanon, I was still quite eager to get to my hotel room, get on the internet, find out what was happening in Louisiana. And before doing that, I took a shower, having been in the plains for a long time and feeling really grimy, and I nearly slipped in the bathtub. I did slip in the bathtub and nearly hit my head and died. I figure I would have died if I had hit it the right way, because it was like a massive sort of stone, kind of slippery stone bathtub that. And I was thinking, what kind of headlines would that make if a left-wing American folk singer dies in the bathtub in Beirut? And I'm afraid I would just end up creating a whole new conspiracy theory stream. You know, what happened to the guy who slipped in the bathtub? What an ignominious way to die in Beirut, of all places, to slip in the bathtub. But I lived, and I wrote this song. Clear, the future was coming, and now it's here. They had to fix the levees, otherwise they'd break. On one side was the city, above it was the lake. It was in the daily papers, in bold letters was the writ. What would happen when the big one hit? But every year they cut the funding just a little more, so they could give it to the army to fight their oil war. And National Geographic and the Times began. They forecast the apocalypse, that it was coming soon. Preparations must be made, they said. Now is the time. It was years ago, they shouted. Inaction was a crime. They said the dikes must be improved and the wetlands must be saved. But Washington decided instead they should be paved, because malls were more important than people's lives. So put some gold dust in your eyes and hope no storm arrives. New Orleans, New Orleans. New Orleans. Years and years of warning, no evacuation plan. It was just as the waters rose. Get out if you can. There were no buses. No one chartered any trains. There was no plan to rescue all of those who would remain. All the people with no money. All the people with no wheels. All of those who couldn't hotwire one that they could steal. Thousands and thousands of people abandoned by the state. Abandoned by their country. Just left to meet their fate. New Orleans. New Orleans. New Orleans. Thank you. then they died some more. They drowned inside their attics, an army of the poor, an army of the destitute who couldn't get away. And the world will remember those sad and awful days when people shouted from their houses, dying on their roofs. When people came to find them, they were turned back by the troops. They died there with no water. They died there in the heat. They were shot down by the soldiers for trying to find some food to eat. New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans. Now the city is in ruins, a massive toxic sea scattered through the nation. 500,000 refugees, here we are. In the richest country on the earth, where the color of your skin determines what your life is worth, where oil is the king, where global warming is ignored, where the very end of life is the place we're heading towards, where it's more than just a metaphor, the flooding of the dike. And if we don't stop this madness, the whole world will be like New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans, New Orleans. Wonderful guy in the past year. Can't remember when exactly, but Utah Phillips died at the age of 72, I think. And he did more probably than anybody in the past 40 years to keep alive the memory of the industrial workers of the world and the culture of the IWW, that was a massive organization that was flourishing in Australia and the US and Canada and lots of other countries around the turn of the 20th century. And he recorded this song that I hadn't done in a long time, because I figured everybody knew it, and then I realized that most people didn't, and most people had never heard of Utah Phillips, even if they heard of me, which always seemed really weird. Like, I always figured they would have heard of him first because he's older or something, but it doesn't work that way. But this song was... It was found in somebody's attic in 1917 and published as a lyric in The Industrial Worker. And it was written anonymously. And it was sounds to me like a response to an accusation of some kind, but I don't know what the accusation was. But it must have been a nasty one to lead to a song like this. And Utah Phillips... He used to talk more than he sang, actually. I mean, he wrote some fantastic songs, but he'd do a lot of talking, and he told a lot of stories. And the story that I always remember, probably more than any, was that, I don't know, just so amusing. It apparently actually happened. Utah, in the 1980s, he lived in eastern Washington, and he was married with kids and out there, and he was doing a lot of touring, and he was involved as well, like any self-respecting American leftist was at the time, with the sanctuary movement, helping to give sanctuary and churches and homes to Central American refugees from the civil wars that my country was promulgating. And so he was also involved with some fairly serious gardening. He had a very large garden, you know, vegetables and stuff, like the American sense of the word garden, which doesn't mean front yard. And he was coming back from a tour, and he knew, as a result of his activities with the sanctuary movement and other things, he knew his phone was tapped, because everybody's phone was tapped who was involved with that. And so he had the bright idea of, he was dreading having to start digging up the ground to plant stuff. That was the hard part that he really didn't like. And so he was trying to think how to till the soil without having to till the soil, you know, like any good hobo would. And he was, so he came up with the idea. He called his wife and he said, "Whatever you do, don't dig up the front yard. That's where the guns are buried." And sure enough, that night the FBI showed up and dug up the front yard. They didn't find any guns, because little did they realize, apparently, that Utah Phillips was by that time an avowed pacifist and was not hiding any guns in the front yard. But
We have fed you all for 1,000 years, yet you hail us still unfed. Though there's never a dollar of all your wealth but hails the workers dead. We have given our best to give you rest, and you lie on crimson wool. If blood be the price of all your wealth, good God, we have paid it full. There's never a mine blown skyward now, we're buried alive for you. There's never a wreck drift shoreward now, but we are its ghastly crew. Go reckon our dead by the forges red and the factories where we spin. If blood be the price of your cursed wealth, good God, we have paid it in. We have fed you all for 1,000 years. That was our doom, you know, from the days when you chained us in your fields to the strike of a week ago. You have taken our lives and our babies and wives, and we're told it's your legal share. If blood be the price of your lawful wealth, good God, we have paid it fair.
I heard things about Liz Moore before I came here. I heard about hippies, and I like hippies because they smoke marijuana, and I smoke marijuana, so me and hippies have a lot in common. But I'm very disappointed to say that nobody has yet offered me a joint. I've been here for 2 hours, 3 hours now, and I'm very disappointed.
Cannabis cafe, smoking good old Sansevieria at the beginning of the day. But here I am in New York City, hiding out Central Park, getting kidnapped by the police today sometime before dark. But I wish I was in Vancouver at the cannabis cafe, smoking good old Sansevieria at the beginning of the day. The judge looked down upon me frowning. He said, kid, get on your way. Just don't start out your mornings with espresso in the J. I said, I wish I was in Vancouver at the cannabis cafe, smoking good old Sansevieria of the day. I hitched a ride out to Portland, caught one up to D.C., took a bus over to Hastings Street to have a bowl with my coffee. Now I'm up in Vancouver at the cannabis cafe, smoking good old Sansevieria at the beginning of the day. Now smoking good old Santa Maria at the beginning of the day.
This is one of many anniversaries. I think today is my friend Signe's birthday in Denmark, so that's her anniversary. But it's also another very significant anniversary. 10,000 children played in the playground, swinging on the swing. Didn't hear the sound of the single plane that flew overhead. The third shift workers were just going to bed. There was a flash of light and a rumbling noise. Gone in an instant, parents, girls, and boys. 10,000 mothers were boiling rice, 3,000 prisoners of war were rolling their dice, hoping they'd survive this terrible storm. When each young man in his uniform vanished in the air, in the blink of an eye, one moment they lived, in the next they all died. Hiroshima. Hiroshima. Ten thousand lovers made love to each other, each one of them thinking there might not be another. Living so long with death everywhere, much more than one person alone can bear. But there wasn't time for a final kiss. Who could have known it'd end like this? Hiroshima. 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 200,000 people were living their lives. Grandparents, children, fathers and wives. Now they're just shadows on the street. In such a quick burst of incredible heat. Now listen to them talk about doing it again. From whence came the souls of these terrible men? Hiroshima. 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 I'm doing a children's show tomorrow morning here in Lismore. Can't remember where it is though. Is it here or somewhere else in Lismore?
Friends Daycare.
Friends Daycare. At what time?
11.
11. So if you have any kids, imagine you can probably bring them by. Here's a little preview.
I went to play at the playground to do things I like so much. Run with my friends, play make-believe, swing on the swings and such. But this morning I went to the playground and bullies were guarding the swings. They knocked over the slide, dumped out the sandbox, took away all of our things. This playground is run by bullies, and they're all so big and mean. But this playground was made for all of us, and we're gonna change this scene. Well, all of us were scared of the bullies. They were so big and we were so small. Till somebody said if we organized, we could be 10 feet tall. We stood on each other's shoulders, put blankets over our heads. We looked like monsters and we roared like lions, and those bullies ran home and hid under their beds. This playground was run by bullies, and they're all so big and mean. This playground was made for all of us, and we're gonna change this scene. Well, we got that playground back. But then we looked across the street, saw the sewage plant belching out smoke, poisoning the ground under our feet. It's giving us all asthma, and the hour is getting late. So we marched across the way, and we blocked that factory gate. 'Cause this world is run by bullies, and they're all so big. This world is run by bullies, and they're all so big and mean. But this world was made for all of us, and we're gonna change this scene.
Sixth show that Phil and I have done together on this Palestine Solidarity Tour. But I've been letting him do all the songs about Palestine because seems like a fair distribution of things. Not really, but I've been doing some. But I keep on forgetting to do this one. And me and Phil have written at least 6 songs with almost identical titles and choruses, completely independent of each other. It's kind of almost uncanny. Except if you actually go to the Palestine or the refugee camps or anywhere in the Palestinian diaspora, you'll see so many of the same symbols and the same messages that, you know, the idea of returning home, the idea of the pictures of keys. Keys are everywhere. And lots of people still have the house keys to their old house, like Phil was singing about the old house that they were kicked out of, along with 700,000 other Palestinians in 1948. I wrote this song after reading an interview with Dr. Sami Al-Aryan, who's in a Florida prison right now for being outspoken Palestinian. Let me tell you about a lady known as Grandma to me. She died back in 1982. She liked to tell stories just like other, about how things used to be just like other old ladies do. She talked about her neighbors, Muslims and Christians, Arabs, Britons, and Jews. They came over for dinner to her house in Yaffa. Talk about business and news. We all got along fine a long time ago, before everything started to change. I never imagined back in those days I'd end up here on this firing range. There on a string around her neck, dangling in front of her heart, the key to her home, the key to her people, the key to her world. Blown apart. I recall the days well, 1948, the year of the catastrophe. With machine guns and torches, they drove us away to the land of the refugee. We all thought it would pass, but the decades dragged on and my heart turned to flame. To those who'd live in my home, where is your conscience? Do you feel the remorse and the shame? There on a string around her neck, dangling in front of her heart, the key to her home, the key to her people, the key to her world. Blown apart. Now after three generations, I and her grandchildren say, the key is theirs and mine. And all over the world, we cry for Al-Auda, home. Maybe we will prevail, but come what may, as empires fall and rise, nothing will change the memory of the tears in my grandmother's eyes. They're on a string around her, dangling in front of her heart, the key to her home, the key to her people, the key to her world. Blown apart.
Here's a sing-along about the economic collapse. I wrote it years before the economy collapsed, because I had read Marx and I knew it was going to happen because he said so, and that was good enough for me, and it usually works out that way. But I also knew it was going to happen because I had the inside knowledge of somebody who actually turned off my television set and looked around me in the United States. And if you leave the city of Boston, Chicago, San Francisco, Houston, or Phoenix, if you're not in one of those places, the whole country is a total mess, really. You know, I mean, those are like the, you know, if you leave the cities that everybody's going to where there's work, you know, go to the other cities like Detroit, Cleveland, Toledo, you know, you just go, the list goes on and on. They're just like complete shells of a city, you know. Detroit has less than half the people it had 20 years ago. So this is a song I wrote. It was a preemptive song. I knew it was going to happen. Preemptive song, right? It's a new art. There's several songs about the death of Margaret Thatcher, and it still has yet to happen. Attila the stockbroker wrote the best one, I think. You can download it on his website. It can happen in a moment. Sometimes it does, when what could be is, and what should be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. The window can open,
seems so wide, but you can never tell when it's gonna slam shut. One day you're a target on the firing ranges, the next day all of a sudden everything changes. When it all comes crashing down. So easy to feel like you're standing still, then the scene is revealed and you're on top of the hill. At that point you know you can let it go by, or spread your wings and take to the sky. When it all comes crashing down. When what you know, they all be true, but sometimes all that's real is what you do. Some moments are coming, others are came.
Go to one of those climate camps happening all over Australia in September. You can go pick up a copy of the Green Left Weekly out there and find out more about that, among other places. First you told us only, through you could we know God, and if we dared to question, he wouldn't spare the rod. For you we worked the soil, for you we dug the moors, for you we shed our blood, fought so many pointless wars. Now you try to tell us there's nothing we can do. You say the world around us belongs fairly to the few, but about 6 billion people no doubt will agree this world is our home, not your property. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you who would enclose the land all around the earth, our future is your downfall when you cut this ball and chain. You who sacrifice the public good for your private gain, with our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores. But because you own the money, you say that it's all yours. We laid the phone lines and the pipelines, and then right before our eyes, you say these things are taxes paid for. You now will privatize. Privatize the hospitals, privatize the schools, privatize the prisons for all those who break your rules. And preparing for the day when all the wells run dry, you say you own the very rain that falls down from the sky. But it's the commons, our right of birth. And you who'd own the water all around the earth, our future is your downfall when you cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With your Terminator seeds, you claim to own the genomes of every animal that breeds. You claim to own our culture and the music that we play, and with each song that we download to your coffers we must pay. You'd even own my name, and you'd say it's for the best. Maybe it'll let us on your radio if your business is just your country. You own Western, you say you've given us a choice. You may own the airwaves, but you'll never own my voice. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you'd own the music all around the earth, our future is your downfall when you cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. It's the commons, our right of birth. And you who would own everything all around the earth, our future is your downfall when you cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. I'll do one more, and thank you all so much for coming, and thanks so much to Nick and all the other folks from Green Left Weekly, and thanks so much to Phil Mansour and a whole bunch of other people who aren't here who made this tour happen, and a whole bunch of people who are here who made this leg of it happen. It's been lots of fun.
My own tour continues. So if without Phil, I'll be playing in Mullaney on Tuesday and Sydney on Wednesday. So if you know anybody in Mullaney or Sydney, then feel free to send them on or warn them off. And then I'm going to New Zealand, going from Christchurch to Auckland and a whole bunch of, well, eight places altogether. So Christchurch, Auckland, Wellington, and five other places. So if you know people there, feel free to send them on. It's all on my website, davidgrovix.com. And there's some CDs out there, but I'm almost out of them. So you can get them on my website if you feel inspired. Download music. Actually, the US dollar is so cheap, you can buy all kinds of stuff from all kinds of American websites a lot cheaper than you can get it here. I hate to, encourage you to, destroy the Australian economy by buying stuff from the US, but the books are so expensive here. You can get them like half price in the US, so even with postage, it's still cheaper. The price of the books never seems to have anything to do with the rate, the exchange rate. I don't know how they determine these things. I know because I keep looking for more books on the Eureka Stockade. There's some exciting stuff out there. Well, this is a great place, but it has some of the squeakiest chairs, I tell you. The things you notice. I like it though, otherwise. You're sitting there in front of me, floating in a cloud. Your chocolate eyes meet mine, you're whispering out loud. Thoughts that make me shiver, words that make me melt, and I can only be thankful for the deal I've been dealt. For the birds outside this window, for this guitar on my knee, for the smile on your lips, for the good you found in me. Looking at the wood stove and the towels upon the sink, with your fingers on my forehead, all that I can think is life is beautiful. For the way you kiss my fingers, for the way you hold my hands, for the way you look in those leather pants, for the times like now when I just gotta roll another smoke, breathe deeply for a moment and take another toke. Life is beautiful. We can spend the evening dreaming of the rising sun, and even when the shadows look me right in the eye, feel your heart within my belly like the stars up in the sky. Life is beautiful.
David, and thank you, Phil, and thank you, everyone, for coming. Probably the only formal proceedings left,
thanks,
of course.
Sister Ray.
And Sister Ray, of course. And Darren on sound, and everyone else who helped out late this evening. I think it was. But the last formal thing to do is to draw the raffle, of course. And the traditional thing is second prize first, 10-week or $10 introduction description to Green the Quickly goes to
Christian.
Okay, we'll grab your details shortly. The first prize, which is a copy of Volume 1 and 2 of the Peace Not War, excellent compilation that came out of the UK and around 2003, goes to Corinne.